Before we get started, there are two different types of double patenting, statutory and non-statutory. Statutory, as the name implies, is based on the statute, specifically Section 101, which uses the phrase a patent. Over the years, the courts have interpreted this phrase to mean the singular, so one patent. And in this scenario, the question is the same invention being claimed twice? If it is, in that situation, a patent will be denied. And there is no terminal disclaimer available. The options really are to either amend or cancel the claim so they're not coextensive in scope. But this talk is focused on non-statutory obviousness-type double patenting. And it is non-statutory, meaning that it's based on the case law. The analysis is that the scope and content of the potentially conflicting claims are compared. And in the obviousness-type double patenting, you could have anticipation or obviousness arguments, and it's also permissible for other prior art to be combined in order to support the overall conclusions of obviousness-type double patenting. As we go through this talk, keep in mind the overall public policy concerns. So this doctrine was really created to promote the purposes of the Patent Act, specifically by giving inventors the right to exclude others for limited periods of time. The inventors, in exchange, disclose their inventions in patents. And so the idea was that the public could benefit from those disclosures. You can see that if the patent expires at that point, the public would have the benefit of this knowledge and would be free to use these discoveries and modifications of them. In the event that a patent owner files sequential patents covering minor or obvious variations of these discoveries, the patent can be effectively extended so that no one can get on the market, and this defeats the overall purpose. This problem was worse under the old law. So it used to be that the patent term was 17 years from the issue date. So each time a continuation issued, there would be another 17 years of patent term. And this could potentially be abused, and we had some issues with submarine patenting. So under the new law, the patent term is 20 years from the earliest effective filing date, and this does help. But you still can have patents expiring at different times because of differing PTA, for example. So double patenting still exists post-GATT. And one of the things that we do to address double patenting is the use of a terminal disclaimer. Terminal disclaimers do two things. One, they ensure that the patents will expire at the same time. But secondly, they require common ownership, which means that basically the risk of multiple lawsuits from multiple patent owners is mitigated. And typically, for many years, it was thought that once you had your patent, that first issued patent, what you could do in a double patenting scenario was any subsequent patent that came with a double patenting issue would be addressed using a terminal disclaimer. And this would effectively prevent this unjustified extension of patent term. And this was the prevailing view until the Gilead case, which we had this inverted situation. So you had a later issued but earlier expiring patent being applied as a reference to invalidate an earlier issued but later expiring patent. And in the Gilead case, what we had were two patents, the 375 and the 483 patent, both owned by Gilead, same inventor, similar disclosure, and they basically were not part of the same family. They had different priority dates and different examiners, and what we saw was that the 375 patent was applied by NACO as a reference in their argument to invalidate the 483 patent. Gilead argued that this was not proper, that the first issued patent did not require a terminal disclaimer, that it was only subsequent patents that required the terminal disclaimer. The Federal Circuit disagreed and said that the 375 patent could actually serve as a reference to the 483 patent in this obviousness-type double patenting. And in their reasoning, the court describes various reasons that we should be focused on the expiration date. And really, I think it comes down to the public policy goals, that focusing on the expiration date better serves the purposes of obviousness-type double patenting. They discussed potential gamesmanship during prosecution, where you might have a series of applications filed with different priority dates, and then the patent owner selects the one that gives them the longest term. They talked about also how it was too arbitrary and capricious because you could have a patent that issued by only a few days difference resulting in a huge difference in patent term. And they emphasized that the expiration date was the proper focus in this analysis. There was an interesting dissent that made a few points I wanted to note. So in the dissent, there was a discussion about how the law had changed. And now that we were 20 years from the earliest effective filing date, the issue of extension of patent terms was somewhat reduced. That risk of abuse was somewhat less under the current law. The dissent also noted that if the 375 patent had not existed, then Gilead would have been entitled to the entire scope of the 483 patent. That seemed a little bit unfair. That even though there was no terminal disclaimer in the 483 patent, the 375 patent did have a terminal disclaimer. So that reduced some of the risk of multiple lawsuits from multiple parties. So that concern was a little bit less. And they also, in the dissent, discussed that the idea that the public should be free to use the invention after expiration was a little bit more nuanced, because freedom to operate actually is not a guarantee. There might be overlapping or improvement patents out there. There could also be legal or regulatory bars for the public. So you're not necessarily guaranteed the right to practice the invention after the patent expires.